Brett Hayes is Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College. Always glad to see you here, Brad. Now, Ted Cruz survived in Texas, and Republicans won the governor and Senate races in Florida. Now, that's interesting in that these were all pretty close. Texas was far closer than anything we've seen. Cruz is, of course, one of the most despised controversial people, you know, in the history of politics. He called Trump all kinds of bad names when he ran against them in the presidential primaries. And yet, you know, he had to come crawling back to him. And he won, but not by much. What do you make of that one?
I think pretty much what you said. I mean, look, it's a deeply conservative state. Very difficult for Democrats to win statewide office. Beto O'Rourke, did about as well as you can. There's some second guessing as to whether he should have gotten down into the trenches, right? He took the Michelle Obama, they go low, I go high approach. Also took this is very much a kind of a citizens campaign, and that really resonated with people. But it also probably has some costs too. They're probably similar. In other words, what he did was probably about as well as you can do. And if you look at his approval numbers, the polling numbers in that state, he kind of was at a wall. I mean, I think when he first gets the nomination, he's, you know, at, 43% or something like that. And then right before the election, I think he went all the way up to about 47%. But most of the time he's around like kind of 45, 46%. And what that suggests is that there just wasn't a lot of extra space for him there. Mm. And Ted Cruz is an evangelical darling. He has a lot of support. That is a state where that constituent is particularly strong. So it's an area where, I think O'Rourke did probably about as well as you could. And a lot of the attention that he received, a lot of the excitement, you know, was coming from outside of the state. In other words, people started to pay attention to him that weren't necessarily Texas voters. His message resonated, I think, in Texas, but much more so elsewhere. And so some of the attention that was kind of spotlighted upon him, I think, was coming from places that were not internal to Texas. We may have had a sense that he was a his prospects were slightly better than what they actually were.
Okay, so you're an expert on many subjects, and one of them is the Supreme Court of the United States. We saw the famous Kavanaugh fight over, you know, his being admitted to the court, which he was. I've heard all kinds of analysis, many of whom have said that, well, the Republican base was actually strengthened by the appointment of Kavanaugh. What do you make of that?
The polling numbers kind of bear that out a bit. In other words, we saw this for much of 2017 and 2018, the enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republicans was quite large. It was double digits. About a month before the election, that closes down to about 4 points.
Yeah.
And one of the events is the Kavanaugh debacle, which was, by the way, just from my perspective, probably about the low point, I think, in our American politics since I've been alive. It was a really difficult time culturally, institutionally, very difficult to figure out what the pathway forward to getting a healthy judicial confirmation process would be. But thinking about, that as a moment, Trump, I think, is right when he says that he is going to campaign on cultural issues, because cultural issues are what resonate with the American people.
So he basically says, define cultural issues for us.
Well, when I'm talking about cultural issues, I'm talking about issues of identity, issues of, to a certain extent, cultural or even ideological commitment. So what I'm not talking about are job numbers, right? When Trump rejects that, he says, like, oh, they want me to run on the economy. I'm not really going to talk about that. You don't want to hear about that. What you want to hear about is the caravan, right? The caravan is an invasion of the United States because it jeopardizes our security. And that's very much about the other, right? That there are these individuals to the south south of our border, brown people that are coming up north, and they're going to threaten white America. That those kind of cultural moments are, in fact, animating the base in a way that helped reduce enthusiasm deficit that the Republican Party was experiencing. And I think the Kavanaugh hearing was very much the same, an assault on maleness, right? That we need to be concerned about the future for our sons because they could be imperiled by women who could just, you know, make up claims about sexual assault.
So this is a sort of an answer from one segment of society on Me Too-ism.
I think that's right. No, exactly. I think that that's very true. And one of the things that studies of there was a study out of the University of Pennsylvania that looked at the 2016 election, and it basically debunked the idea that this was an economic election, right? That it wasn't about those left behind in the economy, and that Trump was somehow able to capture blue collar America that had been neglected, but it was about status. It was about fear of losing one's status in society, particularly white males, right? And we see that in the coalition, right? Undereducated white males are the core of the Trump constituency.
The dissatisfied constituency.
That's right. Yeah. And so these cultural tones do is that it plays to that group and animates them, gets them motivated in a way that talking about jobs, job growth, job creation, tax cuts does not.
And yet, Brad Hayes, many people looking at this last election, this midterm election, are saying that there's a huge polling difference between what women are thinking and what men are thinking. So, A, did women go to the polls as opposed to telling their pollsters, did they go and did they vote that way? What do you make of that?
Yeah, no. So I haven't seen all of the numbers as of the time that we're taping this, but you're absolutely right that there is this massive gender gap that has grown significantly. And we talked before about the change in suburban America, right? That suburban America moved to the left and voted blue, and we saw that in places like New York 19. The reason for that is about suburban women, particularly white suburban women, who had voted for Trump in the 2016 election, but feel very much isolated, ostracized by his messaging, and are gravitating now to Democratic candidates. So, in other words, rallying your base may in fact be adversely impacting other constituents, and there's a cost for that. But for Trump, at least, you know, I don't know if he's thinking about this or if he's intuiting it, but to him, he thinks that mobilization seems to be the key. It's a little bit thinking about previous presidential elections, you know, the 2004 election where, you know, Karl Rove's strategy was turn out our base. If we turn out our base, we'll win because there are more. Right. I mean, you know, there is a large white constituency. If you turn them out in big numbers, you can do a lot to discount, you know, gains that Democrats have made, say, among Hispanic voters. And so that continues to be the strategy. And at least based on his words after the election, he's very comfortable and there doesn't look like there's going to be any change in that strategy. So I would continue to expect to see the same kind of cultural arguments being made. And if we're hoping for any kind of tone down in what we've seen, it's not going to come before 2020.
Well, as usual, I agree with you, Brad Hayes. It's delightful to have you here. Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, and it is always educational for me to hear from you. Thanks so much, Brad.
Thanks, Alan.